Good morning. It's my pleasure to call to order the meeting of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission for Wednesday, April 23rd, 2014. First of all, I'd like to note that we have a revised agenda. There was a correction to the agenda under the Legislation Committee. So if you'd like to follow along with the, we just added a title, completed corrected the agenda. So we'll be following this one. First of all, I'd like to turn to our secretary to confirm that we have a quorum.
We have a quorum, Madam
Okay,
Chair.
Great. Thank you very much. Again, I wanted to comment to invite members of the public to comment on any of the items before us today. We have speaker cards that are on the table against the window, so please complete the speaker card, and I will call on your name, call on you as the item comes up. So we have a quorum. The chair's report, I just wanted to comment briefly. I had the honor yesterday of representing the commission in Richmond for one of the groundbreaking for one of our first priority conservation area projects. It's along the shoreline between Richmond and Pinole, and it really exemplifies our goals that we've set forward in Plan Bay Area to accompany open space preservation and development and recreation opportunities for communities as we embark on our focused housing program also. And it was an amazing event. We had Congressman Miller as well as representatives from the state Fish and Game and the federal EPA, along with our partner, the Coastal Conservancy, who is helping us with the evaluation of the projects in the lower counties, and the congestion management agencies are helping vet the applications in the North Bay counties. And I know this is the first of many events that you all will be attending in your home counties, and it truly is a wonderful example of the work we're able to do working in partnership with the communities and the Park District and the various other agencies that are involved. And I really want to commend our staff, our MTC staff, who worked so hard to develop this program and to that will be working hard to follow through as this program proceeds throughout the Bay Area. So our next speaker, next item is item three, a report by Kathleen Baker of the Policy Advisory Council. So welcome, Kathleen. Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. I just have a very brief report out on our April meeting of the Policy Advisory Council. We finally concluded the formal part of our orientation, received a presentation on the operations division of the commission. And that was really well received. Unfortunately, we had fairly light attendance to that meeting, but it was a good discussion around that. And then we moved forward with Craig reporting on the priority development area investment and growth strategy and One Bay Area grant, kind of round one assessment. And really, a lot of the discussion that came out of that and came out of the operations briefing when it came to things like the Express Lanes project are really extending the outreach, really appreciating what the congestion management agencies have done so far and what the commission has done so far with its public engagement, but really the man on the street and their awareness of a lot of these long-range strategies is not really connecting yet. So the council's really looking forward to helping take that on, but really would encourage more stretch goals moving forward with the second round of OBAG and really as the express lanes move forward. So we'll be looking forward to more of that. Thank you.
Kathleen, very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Now I'll turn to our executive director for his report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. I think I shared with you my concern at the last meeting that if I ever wrote down that Ann was leaving, she would leave. And it's true, because she's left and it's written down right here. The good news, of course, coming out of all of that is that Alex Bockelman is taking her position, and I wrote that down as well, and she's sitting right there. So it's all going according to plan. It gets even better. I have more breaking news. You know, this was all a cascading effect when Ann decided to retire. And so now Alex is a deputy, and Alex's former position as Director of Programming and Allocations was vacant, and I'm pleased to announce that we have filled that position as well through a promotion of Ann Richman, who is right there. Stand up, Ann. So I know you're all in the habit of bugging Alex about projects and funding, and you can keep doing that, but bug Ann too. And as it turns out, in recruiting for the director position, we also came across a very good candidate to take Ann's old job, because, of course, she's moving up, and that creates a vacancy in the principal position in that section. And you'll be getting his name and particulars in due course, but I might as well mention it now. His name is Matt Maloney. He works currently at our counterpart agency in Chicago, and he's relocating here with his family. So it's going to be good to welcome him as well. So that, I think, completes the cascade of changes that have resulted from Ann's departure. Turning the page, I would like to thank those of you who were able to join us at the workshop in Sonoma. We spent a lot of time, as Kathleen mentioned it, on the operations division and what that division could look like in the future. And I appreciated your advice, which was quite candid and I think very thoughtful. I also mentioned here an oddity that occurred, and I think it's worth mentioning just for the heck of it, and that is there's a new director of the South Carolina Department of Transportation appointed by Governor Nikki Haley, and her name is Janet Oakley. And some of you may not, in fact, most of you may not remember Janet. I think Commissioner Kinsey might from his service on AMPO. But Janet was the first staff director of the Association of Metropolitan Planning Organizations. And it's somewhat remarkable that an MPO type would be appointed to run a DOT, because MPOs and DOTs sometimes are a little bit like cats and dogs, especially in South Carolina, I can imagine. But that has occurred, and so congratulations to Janet. We also had an announcement in Washington, skipping down two items from Senator Boxer and the ranking Republican on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, Senator Vitter from Louisiana, on some principles that will guide their reauthorization effort for MAP 21, which, as I think you know, expires very shortly now, certainly in congressional time very shortly, September 30th of this year. The principles all look good, but the principles aren't where the problem is. The problem is the money, and the fact is that as of September 30th, maybe sooner, maybe in August, the receipts in the Highway Trust Fund will be less than its obligations, which means they will start restricting what obligations they pay. Right now, it's a pretty good deal. The states actually get reimbursed, like with the press of a computer button, pretty much on the day they send in the invoice. So it's not as if a cataclysm will occur in the first couple of days if Congress is late. And Congress being late is almost a certainty. The issue will be, though, over time, if you don't have enough money in your checking account, at some point you start bouncing checks or you don't write checks. So the main issue before the Congress continues to be the ability to come up with just to maintain current funding levels. And that, in fact, is one of the principles that these senators announced, is to keep current funding levels plus inflation. In order to do that, they need to find over a six-year period, if they wanted to do a six-year bill, $100 billion. It's a daunting prospect. And that really is where the focus of the effort is going to be. I think if I had to handicap it, in all likelihood, they're not going to be able to do that, which means they're going to have to make the bill much shorter. In fact, they may try to do a stopgap bill that just gets them past the election, and they'll have to find some money to do even that. You may recall that last time when MAP 21 was enacted, it was enacted after a series of stopgap extensions. But those extensions were possible with the revenue in the trust fund under the current gas tax and the previous bailout from the general fund. There are no such revenues in the trust fund this time. So basically, the authorization and the receipts are in trouble at the same time. And that is the issue that they will be debating quite vigorously in Washington over the next several months. I don't know if there's any I just have a few more items to get through, unless you want to. Commissioner Kinsey, I just saw you wanting to get in on that one. It's a juicy one. If you'll let me, I'll just get through the rest of the report, but I would like to spend a minute or two on the next item because it's quite a significant one, and that has to do with cap and trade revenue in Sacramento. You may recall that a few weeks ago, Senator Steinberg made news by proposing to essentially remove the transportation elements of the cap and trade system and instead impose a carbon tax on transportation fuels. He was greeted, his proposal was greeted with a lot of concern, I think, across the political spectrum. And he reached the judgment a few days ago that that probably was an idea whose time has not yet come. So he has tried, I think, in the best traditions of American politics to make some lemonade out of a lemon, and has instead put forth a major cap-and-trade funding proposal, not just for the transportation portion of the program, but for the whole enchilada. And his proposal, I think we sent out to you when it occurred a few days ago, the particulars, and I've included in my packet the document that he distributed, which shows how the money would be spent. What I wanted to do today is to spend just a quick minute with you on Attachment 3, which is a set of two little pie charts in color, side by side, because I think these tell a very important part of the story for his proposal and how it relates to the framework that you adopted in December of last year. And that, in fact, is what the two pie charts illustrate. On the left is the framework that you adopted. On the right is the framework that Senator Steinberg just proposed this month. And you can see quite a bit of similarity. Now, there are also quite a few differences that I'll highlight as well. But in terms of similarity, you'll see that in both programs, transit looms very large, almost half the money, in fact, half the money in his proposal. In both proposals, there is a very large next component for either housing or a housing incentive approach, which is what OBAG is. And then there is a third slice of the pie where the two really don't compare to each other, but the two are I think, unusual in being related to cap-and-trade greenhouse gas emission reduction. They're not the first thing you think about when you think about that subject. In our case, freight and goods movement. In his case, the shop or road repair. Those are the similarities. Let me mention a couple of the differences. One difference is that when you look at these two transit pieces, they're really not all public transit. Ours is. The money we're proposing to spend, you'll remember, had a capital component and an operating component for public transit. In the case of Senator Steinberg's proposal, 30% of that money is public transit in the same sense, but 20% is high-speed rail. And that is a statewide imperative. He is obviously trying, I think, to be responsive to the governor's proposal to devote a significant amount of money to high-speed rail. And I think to the extent that this proposal engages the administration in a negotiation, there's going to be pressure to increase that 20% because the governor has said he'd like to see a third of cap-and-trade revenue going to high-speed rail. Another place they are different, as I mentioned to you just a second ago, is that OBAG is not a housing program per se. It doesn't spend money on housing, but it is a housing incentive program because that's how the money is distributed, and that's how you set up the program to reward and encourage jurisdictions that were building additional housing that was consistent with the priority development areas in Plan Bay Area. The money in Steinberg's bill, of that 40%, 20% is set aside at a minimum for actual housing grants, affordable housing grants. And one way of looking at that money, to me, is to look at redevelopment and what was lost. And redevelopment, depending upon your estimate, was worth about $1.5 billion, $1.2 billion, somewhere in that neighborhood per annum when it was going gangbusters. Now, not all of that was going to affordable housing. Let's say $400 or $500 million was going to affordable housing or thereabouts. When you do the numbers on the senator's proposal, it's in the same ballpark. It's at the same scale. So I think that's a very important policy matter for us to pay attention to in terms of this proposal that he is advancing. And remember, he's advancing a proposal that is for all the cap-and-trade money. Our proposal was premised upon just dealing with the transportation share of that money. And I think I'll conclude this little summary on that point. Our proposal, the pie chart on the left, even though these two pie charts, I'm showing them as the same size, they're not the same size at all. Our proposal was based upon a 25-year estimate that would total about $3 billion. Senator Steinberg's documents, at least, suggest that this program, the entire cap-and-trade program, could generate $5 billion a year. Now, I think that number is likely too high, so chop it in half. Make it $2.5 billion a year. And let's say we get our population share of that, and I think, frankly, we can do better. If we get our population share of that, that's $500 million a year for the Bay Area. You can get to $3 billion pretty fast at $500 million a year. It won't take you 25 years. So I think the most significant thing about this proposal is that it really recasts the size of these numbers and the fact that Senator Steinberg's proposal is so heavily weighted toward transportation investment, housing investment, which I think is very supportive of your overall strategy in Plan Bay Area and the sustainable community approach. And that's not surprising because the author of this is the author of SB 375. So I wanted to spend a minute on it because I consider it so important in advance. And again, what Senator Steinberg is proposing is a statutory framework that would be permanent, potentially even extending the cap and trade program past its sunset in 2020. The governor's proposal, which was released with his budget, was just a one-year budget deal. And I think the next step in the drama will be the May revision of the budget, which the governor releases in mid-May. And we will see if he makes any move toward these kind of numbers and this kind of long-term statutory framework. I think it's fair to say that Senator Steinberg is trying to provoke that negotiation. He leaves his seat at the end of this year, and I think he is looking for a permanent source, and that was the common theme at his press conference, a permanent dedicated source of funding to carry out these sustainable community strategies. And I think what he's put on the table is a very large step and very favorable step in that direction. So enough said about that. And I think probably I will just leave it at that, given how much time I've taken to elucidate it. I'll mention maybe just quickly the map of the month, which is behind Commissioner Sartipi. The map, you really have to read the description with the map to get it. The circles are where we're seeing population growth, net total migration. So the red ones are a lot of net migration. The blue ones are net out migration. So maybe Matt Maloney's not alone in leaving Chicago, because if you notice, a lot of folks are leaving Chicago. But the detail that's sort of buried in this map, yeah, is that quite a lot of the growth in some areas, like New York and L.A. and Miami, is fueled by immigration to the United States. Whereas quite a lot of the growth in some of the Sunbelt areas is due to not only that, but migration from other parts of the United States. And we tend to fall in that latter category. We're getting folks from both places. Although in our case, we're gaining much more from the domestic migration of people. So I will conclude with that map of the month and a reminder on upcoming events that April 30th is our lobby day up in Sacramento. So I think we'll be inviting and engaging some of you in that activity. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. I may have provoked a couple with this report.
Great, Steve. Thank you very much for that comprehensive report. I'd like to, and again, I want to thank you for sending out that detailed memo on the cap and trade proposal last week. I know there was a lot of excitement about that. So appreciate you giving us the details as that was announced. So I know that there are some commissioners. Let me start with Commissioner Vice Chair Cortese and then Commissioner Kinsey. Anybody else? And okay, great.
Steve, back to the cap and trade, Steinberg's approach, and I hadn't looked at it before now, so this is great information for me. And certainly I look at it a little harder now that I know more about it. But on the housing implementation of the housing pass-through, if you will, have the details been drawn up on that yet? I know you compared it dollar-wise to an RDA replacement fund, basically, but obviously that mechanism doesn't exist anymore. And it just strikes me to be a huge difference between approaching that through credit enhancements or tax credits, using it as some sort of annuity in that regard, or you know, any number of other tools via housing trusts, things like TOA, which we have. I'm just wondering, A, if he's started to cement in on that, and if not, is that something that we want to try to influence?
Commissioner, I think that's the principal issue that we should try to influence, because the details on, I'll call it governance, right? Who's going to make decisions about the money? That's going to be a pretty significant issue for everyone to grapple with over the next several months. If you look at his proposal, the framework, I think it's on the third page, he talks about an allocation method for the affordable housing money, and it says distributed through the Strategic Growth Council to regions. Well, exactly what that means, no one knows. And I think it was probably deliberately a little vague so that that can play out over time. But I think there are two basic frameworks here that are possible. One, obviously, is a state mechanism for distributing funds. I mean, the Housing and Community Development Department distributed a lot of bond funds from Prop 1C. So that's a potential model. A second model would be one that's more delegated and devolved to the MPOs, as an example, so that if you're trying to match up the money with the folks who adopted the SCSs, well, why don't you give it to the folks who adopted the SCSs and let them figure it out? And that could be with guidance from the Strategic Growth Council about how to award these funds in some kind of competitive fashion and so on and so forth. I think the same issue is going to play out, Commissioner, with public transit money, because the detail there is even sketchier. What it talks about is distributed based on greenhouse gas performance criteria. Well, what's that mean? One thing we're going to advocate is that they use an existing formula, the State Transit Assistance Formula, which is established so everyone knows what it is. It routes the money through the MPOs, by and large, except in Los Angeles, where they have a separate arrangement. And it also is a formula that's quite favorable to the Bay Area, because it rewards places that have a lot of fare revenue and that spend a lot of their tax money on public transit, and that's us in both cases. So in that case, the way the money, if we were successful in that, the way the money would route is it would route to MTC, and then I think the challenge will be to make sure we can try to deliver on the framework that you adopted in December within that set of parameters. And again, if the funding is as large as is portrayed here, or even half as large as portrayed here, I think we're going to have a lot of wiggle room to be able to deliver on the initial plans you made, and you may need to make more plans to spend more money, for all I know. So I think that governance issue on both the transit money and the housing money will be one that occupies a lot of our time over the next several months.
If I may, I think the governance issue, as you just described, is going to be a huge political issue in and of itself. I think the high finance issue is whether or not they should create, in essence, using the full faith and credit of state government, which its credit rating, which we don't have as an insurer, and then allow us to qualify projects for essentially a state insurance program that would mimic some of the things that HUD's done in the past, when it was at its zenith point. Although I don't know if Tom's here, I know he's argued that a lot of those programs still exist, but with respect to that as a comparison, I would say that there's a real question there as to where you get the most leverage. We can still make the decisions as to who qualifies in our region based on our SES, but I'm not sure if just doling the money out directly to projects versus using this money at the state level to back up default cases that don't qualify, and keeping that essentially in a giant reserve fund that does that and guarantees projects.
Yeah, I would draw a distinction between the housing and the transit money. I think with the transit money, there really is no state mechanism that exists to allocate transit funds. I mean, the CTC allocates some money to projects, big capital projects, but we've got the STA formula. It puts the MPOs in charge, and I think that's just the obvious answer. With housing, as you say, I think you could make a regional or a statewide model work. One thing we've had discussions on just this week with Senator Steinberg's office is, would there be a room within this housing pot for some kind of revolving loan fund like TOA? So maybe we ought to have a statewide TOA and not just be the only guys out on the bleeding edge doing it. And also, the state, as you know, has the ability to continuously appropriate funds. And that is proposed for the high-speed rail portion here because they want to be able to securitize those revenues. And so who gets continuous appropriation in this deal is really going to advantage them in terms of having a stable and bondable funding source.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Kinsey, and then Commissioner McKenzie, and then Commissioner Sperry.
Thank you, Chair Worth. First, I want to start by thanking you for scheduling the workshop that we had. Very helpful for those of us who were able to participate. And I wanted to suggest that perhaps you could ask our executive director and the staff to put together a succinct summary of what our takeaway points were, because not all commissioners were able to be there, and I think that it would probably benefit those of us who were there, but also the others who weren't able to join us, as to what direction we really were making some critical choices about. In particular, we looked at what we could do to make a difference on our highways, and I think we had a pretty vigorous, and Steve calls it a candid conversation, but I think it would be good to get the full commission to get in sync on that. In addition, I just wanted to point out that during that opportunity to be together, Steve had the chance to speak with Jim Sperring and myself about a concern that each of us has around the priority development areas. And in my opinion, we were all pushed at a pretty hard pace to meet the time deadlines of our RTP, the RENA, SB 375. But to make these priority development areas work going forward, the communities have to really understand them. And there are some essential ingredients. Excellent design has to be there. There have to be really attractive public spaces. There have to be community businesses that are available to the people who are living there. And they need to be accessible by walking and biking to get to them. So Jim and I have encouraged the idea of having the commission develop some tools that could be used in local communities, delivered by local elected officials and community leaders within their own community, to prepare instead of waiting until the next round comes in another year from now and we're out there scrambling again to defense against the kind of concerns that are raised. And in particular, I think it will be useful to support the communities that are taking this to get excellent design, because without great design, these transit-oriented developments don't really serve the long term. To Steve, I wanted to raise the question of the point you were making about Map 21. You saw me starting to fidget there. Obviously, we've got a real challenge here, both the authorization and the funding source. The thing that I wonder about is, here we are, we're a big MPO around the world, around the country, we're recognized. What could we do to get APTA, to get AMPO, to get the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, to get the League of Cities, to get NACO, to kind of have one voice to say, don't mess with this, and to really have a presence? You know, when I go to Washington, I see ads on the television there that don't get shown anywhere else in the country. They're talking to Congress. And it's somehow, we need to figure out how to harness the sort of shared sense that this is really important. And we pay significantly to have our presence in Washington on an annual basis. I'd be interested in knowing what we could do to amplify the importance of this. Because right now, that, you know, we know it, but I don't see it in the papers. I don't see anybody else starting to sweat the deal. Thank you.
You know, Commissioner, I think there's always more we could do. I know a lot of you spend a lot of time in Washington already. I do, too. I served on a national commission. Congress knows what they need to do here. They just don't want to do it. And the difficulty I think we face, first and foremost, is that we have gotten so good at bailing them out with state and local money that they really don't have much of an incentive to do it. The federal government is now 11% of our transportation investment program in the Bay Area. Now, look, we're up the creek without that 11%, but we're up a bigger creek without 89%. And so I'm just not sure that, you know, the full court press, all the entities that you mentioned are already singing, I think, generally from the same songbook. And it has seemed that the path of least resistance for the Congress, because they've clearly decided they don't want to cut the program, which is good news, but they don't want to raise the tax, which is bad news. And if that continues to be your position, the only place to go is the general fund of the United States. And whether it comes from some tax reform deal, whether it comes from imposing new taxes on cigarette rolling papers, I swear to God, that was part of the last bailout. That seems to be where we are. And so I think one bit of reassurance, Commissioner, I can offer is I don't think the Congress is in the mood to cut a whole ton of construction jobs in the middle of a reelection campaign. They're just not going to do that. So I think they're going to put some bandage on this thing, and it's going to last however big the bandage is. But I hate to be hopeless about any subject, but I guess I've been watching these folks for too long, and I think what we are watching is the disintegration of the federal program. And the Obama administration, as well as the House chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, a Republican, they have both said, let's bail this whole thing out with tax reform revenue. And if that's what they want to do, that might provide the size of the patch that we need to really make the program whole. But it really will be a different transportation program than we've ever had before. And it will place transportation squarely in competition with every other general fund need that we've got in an era when there is a very large pressure to reduce all of those expenditures. And it's just not a pretty picture. So, I mean, honestly, and this sounds flip, and I don't mean to be flip, but, I mean, the best thing we could do is actually stop bailing them out and make them own the consequences of their own action or lack of action. But that's not a responsible thing to do. And you've all taken leadership positions in your own community to raise taxes, raise revenue. You've made the hard decisions. And I only wish there were more of you in Washington.
Thank you. Okay. If I may just follow up, too, I think on Commissioner Kinsey, thank you for the suggestions relative to the retreat and your kind words. I think it was a very productive session, and it I think a number of the issues that this makes excellent suggestion to kind of summarize, do a summary piece for everyone, and also there will be a number of actions that will be they'll be coming back to this commission as these concepts were kind of developed and consensus around the table as to next steps. But I also wanted to affirm your perspective, too, in terms of providing some advanced thinking and planning and preparation of tools for the next round and the discussion of the PDAs, because I think that that many of the goals are shared by the vast majority of citizens in our community in our communities around the Bay Area, and it's a matter of providing the resources for local communities to be able to have those discussions. We found in our communities a lot of with the demise of redevelopment, a lot of those historic funds for that cities and counties could use for planning are no longer available. So that's why we need to provide some tools and resources to be able to do that. So thank you very much for those suggestions. So moving on now to Commissioner McKenzie and then Commissioner Spearing.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Executive Director, for including the phrase candid and thoughtful responses in your report to our workshop retreat. As Commissioner Kinsey just said, not on the subject of PDAs, but on the opening subject of the workshop, which was how to get every day in the Bay Area freeways to be Columbus Day. And there was and were candid responses to what was presented. This was not a new topic in front of the commission, because in the operations committee and in front of the commission, we have talked about these interrelationships between ourselves and Caltrans and also our partners, the California Highway Patrol. And in fact, there's a memorandum of agreement that was signed between District 4 and ourselves at the turn of the year, as we looked at transportation management systems. So this was another step further that had been very carefully staffed and did elicit some reactions in terms of should MTC take on ownership of some of these systems in the way of arriving at improved use of the existing freeway systems. So after that session had concluded, internally there have been discussions between myself as chair of the operations committee, and hopefully this is going to include my vice chair, Commissioner Kinsey, and also my ad hoc committee member, Halstead, now returned from her gallivanting abroad. And so we're looking forward to a chance, as the chair just said, to come back to the operations committee and to the commission with some direction forward that would recognize the concerns that the folks who were up there in Sonoma expressed on this ownership issue. But there are some other major policy issues as well moving forward. So if that's enough bureaucratic speak, so be it. But we do intend to have actions come back to this commission as a result of that particular session, and I think it's an excellent idea to have a distribution to all of us of what was discussed up there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McKenzie. Now, Commissioner Spearing.
Steve, you had said on a conservative number about $2.5 billion might come into cap and trade on an annual basis. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's once the transportation fuels come under the cap, which I think begins January next year.
Okay, and then would this be an annual allocation, so like the high-speed rail would get their 20% on an annual basis?
Yeah, and the reason for the percentages, and we have similar policies, is you don't know exactly. One of the concerns about cap-and-trade money, in fact, and why Senator Steinberg had proposed a carbon tax as an alternative, is the cap-and-trade system is a set of auctions, and you've got parties coming in there and speculating and... You know, it's like Wall Street, right? So the number could vary radically year to year. You'll get your percentage is the idea.
Okay, and that's on an annual basis. And you said something, if you could clarify for me, is how would that money come into the region and what either restrictions or constraints would MTC have? So how does that actually come to us?
As I was trying to answer Commissioner Cortez's question, that I think is one of the big jump balls right now, is exactly how that would work. If you read through Senator Steinberg's proposal, there is a consistent refrain about competitively allocated funds, right? I think they are going to resist the notion of a formula by right guarantee to any particular entity or subject. But I think if you don't have any formulas for distribution of the funds at all, you're going to have a free-for-all. And so, as an example, with transit, the idea that we've been developing is if you use the STA formula, the money comes to the RTPAs, and one way we could do it, the way we've dealt with that money in the past, is the population-based money you've done regionally, and the revenue-based money has flown through to the operators, but it's been subject to certain policy conditions. So you could have a competition in the region among the operators. You could have internal competitions within each operator so that we would decide whether Muni came up with a list of projects that actually would reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Or maybe they come up with something that wasn't, and we'd have to review it and go back and forth and come to some consensus. So I think there's a number of different ways that we can try to tailor the state interest in making sure we're reducing GHGs in a cost-effective way with our interest in pursuing some of the policy objectives that you've already, you know, put a stake in the ground for.
And have you had discussions with Steinberg's staff at recognizing the MPOs and the role they play?
Yes, quite a bit, and with him personally. He feels very strongly and is very proud of his role in authoring SB 375. And I think he believes that we, the MPOs, especially the four large ones, that we've stepped up to the plate. And, you know, he's trying to meet us with some resources.
Okay.
Now, there are a lot of folks in Sacramento who don't think that way. You know, the best level of government, I often say, is the one you happen to work at, right? And so there are a lot of folks in Sacramento who think Sacramento ought to decide how to spend all this money. He is going to resist that, I think, but I don't think he's going to be successful 100% of the time. So I think in some of these cases, we're going to have more state involvement than in others. Obviously, with high-speed rail, that's purely a statewide initiative, and it's going to be a state agency driving the train, so to speak. But with public transit, you know, given how local and decentralized it is, I don't think it makes sense for the state to be in charge there. With housing, I think it's a more complicated story. So it's probably a different solution for each of these different little pots.
Okay. And then the last thing, I just want to support Commissioner Kinsey's proposal about developing this toolkit. You know, when we took our trip to Seattle, they had very similar problems, you know, with the expansion of their light rail, taking it under various communities. And what they did is they started incorporating local chambers of commerce, consultants, businesses that were in those communities, and presented the plan to them. And the ones that supported it, they then recruited them, and they helped pay for some of the expenses if the chamber was mailing out stuff or whatever they were doing. And they, according to several of the representatives, it finally turned around to where now it had a local support base, and it wasn't some MPO coming into their town saying this is what you need to do. It had local people. And I really think that we have to have a model for success as we start to promote these PDAs. And I hope, Steve, I hope you're taking this proposal serious, that we really need to look at how we can strengthen our presence in these local communities to where we actually get their support in the implementation of the plan.
Commissioner, I have to say, I'll try to, the term of the day is candor. We've just been trying to put off thinking about the next plan altogether around here for a while, just because the last one was so much fun. But I think the workshop sort of marked that conversation we had, the start of the thinking about the next plan. I think we have a meeting with the consulting team that you referred to us later this week or next week. So we're getting on it, and we are trying to put together a schedule that will guide our activity. One thing I want to mention, and I may have mentioned it at a prior meeting, but I want to make sure that at least we're on the same page here. I think we have a very different task in this next plan than the first one. The first one, we had to come up with the whole thing. I mean, we had to conceptualize a brand new way of doing a transportation plan and RENA and all that stuff together. Whatever you think about that plan, it's done, and it's a fact. Personally, I happen to think it's a pretty good foundation to build on. And so I think in the next plan, I certainly hope we don't go in and scrap that and say, what do you think we ought to have as a plan for the Bay Area? You know, I think we're starting with a very good foundation. And I don't think we're playing all defense. But I think in large part, a lot of our challenge will be defense. That, you know, we think we've put together a pretty good plan. We think it still makes sense for the region. There may be some things we want to change here and there, but we're not looking at a whole-scale revision. And if you share that view, then I think what we have as a challenge in terms of everything, the policy, the outreach, the this, the that, is quite different from the first, and I hope maybe a little bit easier than the first as well.
Steve, I'm not proposing that we change the plan. What I'm saying is that we need to build support within our local jurisdictions. You know, I'm running for re-election. I'm being hammered on this plan, so evidently somebody doesn't like it. And so all I'm saying is we need to come up with a strategy as the plan we do have, how do we have it received better within the local jurisdiction? That's the point. I don't want to redesign the plan.
Thank you. Any other? Yes, Commissioner McKenzie.
Just to add to what Commissioner Sperring just said, this is Jake McKenzie from Sonoma County. I think the hiring of local people in these local TOD areas, as we went up and down the Seattle light rail from downtown out to the airport, it was a real eye-opener. The successes that they had in these local areas by actually hiring local people who knew the area and who knew the people. And I think it was very impressive to those of us who were on that field trip. So I'd just like to second those remarks. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. And again, Steve, thank you for that report. And I know we have our work cut out for us next Wednesday in Sacramento. And really, I just want to also echo thanks to Senator Steinberg for his leadership in this proposal. I think it's a real good faith effort in terms of how the regions responded to SB 375, and really appreciate him putting together this initiative, because it will enable local communities and the regions to be able to deliver on the commitments that we've made. So, Commissioner Kwan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just quick questions. So since one of the big differences to he's not looking at freight, does he plan to incorporate freight within any of the other transportation corridors?
I think, Commissioner,
categories?
Freight is likely to be dealt with. If you go back to those two little pie charts, you'll notice that each of the pie charts has something that just says SCS, and that's sort of a catch-all category. And my guess is that if his proposal were enacted into law tomorrow, that would probably be how we address the freight issue, is through the other SCS strategies where we're looking at a whole series of things, technology, other issues, and as long as we can demonstrate some good greenhouse gas emission reduction, I think that's probably where we'd address the subject.
So you think we'll have the local flexibility to
well,
do that?
Well, that's one thing we'll be strongly advocating for.
That's what I was going to say, if we can just make sure we have some local flexibility. And then the second thing, I'm sorry, I didn't get a chance to read your report, but I'm assuming that transit or in development projects would get priority within the housing?
That's, I think, still to be determined. And just to give you a flavor of it, the TOA program that we have is exclusively based on TOD and the PDAs. I just learned this week, the state actually has a version of TOA, but it's not transit-oriented. It's just a housing loan program. And frankly, in terms of greenhouse gas reductions, if you're building a house over here not near transit or over there not near transit, you're
it's
not going to gain any greenhouse gas reductions by doing either one.
So I was just hoping that as we advocate, I know you have, we have lobbyists. I just texted my own lobbyist that if we can make sure that consistent with our plan that we try to emphasize TOD housing as we lobby. But it looks good, and I want to thank you for your work.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Bates.
Yes, thank you very much. I'll be brief. I appreciate the report and the analysis. I think it's actually very accurate, and as well as looking at a crystal ball, it's hard to say what's going to the future is really going to hold, particularly at the state. My sense of it is from gathering, talking to senators that I know, that the situation is that they're really in flux in an election year. Steinberg is termed out, and there's another person who's taking his place. Kevin De Leon, he's breathing over his neck. Steinberg is wonderful. I think a magnificent legislator. You might not agree with his program, but he's been very successful in passing things and making things happen. So he's a really excellent author. But I think his plan, in all candor, is going to be modified substantially. And I also think that it's not going to be long-term. First of all, legislature can't bind future legislature. So that's the first rule. So if they adopt a long-term plan, it's only good from year to year from being ratified. So I think we're in it for the long haul. And I think we've got to fight. And so I think when people go up on the 30th, they need to understand that things are in play and we ought to try to fight for what we think is the right thing for MPOs.
I do appreciate that comment from a legislative veteran himself, because the fact that this proposal is so favorable to our interests means that it's not so favorable to others. And if you look, in fact, at the proposal, what you see are a series of investments at the top in these categories that are percentage-based. And then there are another series that are basically money off the top, dollar amounts guaranteed. And I'm sure that the folks who are down there, like the electric vehicle crowd, they're going to want to have a percentage-based, permanent stake in the program and not be, get $200 million over the first 10 years and then see you later. So point very well taken that to the extent this is advantageous to us, I think a big part of our job is to help try to carry as much of this over the finish line as we can.
I guess. Steve, may I just follow up kind of on Commissioner Bates' question? One of the challenges with this is to keeping together the coalition essentially of local government. I mean, and I guess one of the things that I was concerned about in terms of some of the discussions around this was that sort of this, there's this discussion in the family is, okay, who's gonna have responsibility at the local level? And my concern is that absent sort of those collective agreements that essentially the default position is, well, if local government can't agree on how the money will flow locally, then we'll just keep it at the state. So are there efforts in terms of the various state organizations kind of paralleling the federal ones to really say, hey, if we want to have these dollars under local control, we need to come together on this?
Yes, there are. And I'm trying to recall, I think at the press event, the counties were represented. I'm trying to remember whether the League of Cities was there. I will say that one thing that is playing in our favor as sort of this intermediary, right? We're not state and we're not local. We're in the middle. is they're looking for competition to occur. And I think competitions occur rather well at this intermediary level. Because it's not as if you all come from France, right? You're from local government, and you bring that perspective, but you also act as regional policymakers. And I think that's something that the state really doesn't have, and that if you were to try to subvene the money to individual cities, you really would lose any sense of competition. So I do think that part of the game sort of plays to our strength. But as you know, Madam Chair, very often local government doesn't always think that MPOs are them. They think we're something else. And so that'll be part of the challenge.
Well, and as you've mentioned, there may be some different ways that money can flow. There's some significant differences between transportation and housing dollars, the way they've flown historically.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you. Thank you again. Next chapter to come soon. And I think that that speaks to the fact that this commission, as individual commissioners, are going to play a really active role as, within our own counties and communities as this evolves in terms of building support with our local legislators as well as our colleagues. So with that, moving on to the next item, commissioner comments. Are there any commissioner comments? General, thank you for these good comments earlier. Next item, we have the consent calendar. Are there any items that either members of the public or commissioners would like to remove from the consent calendar?
Move consent.
Then that's moved by Commissioner Spearing, seconded by Commissioner Tissier. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Next item, we will move to item 7. Is that right? Yeah. Yes. The administration report of the administration committee, and I'd like to turn to the chair, Commissioner Tissier.
Thank you. The administration committee met on April 9, 2014, and referred the following items to the commission for its approval. MTC resolution number 4088 revised. It updates the fiscal year 2013 overall work program to reflect the final allocation amount for the FTA 5303 planning funds for current year. Fiscal year 2013-14 received from Caltrans. This additional $257,793 balance is now being amended into the current overall work plan for approval before it can be spent in the current year. An additional $802,000 of STP planning funds augmented for CMA planning activities is also being added to the overall work program. I move approval of MTC resolution 4088 revised.
Okay, moved by Commissioner Tissier. May I please have a second? Seconded by Commissioner Cortese. Is there any public comment on this item? Any commissioner comments? With that, then, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries unanimously.
And I also have MTC resolution number 4141 for fiscal year 14-15 overall work program, the overall work plan planning certification and authorization for execution of agreement for federal planning grants. The overall work program guides the collaborative metropolitan transportation planning process involving MTC, ABAG, Caltrans, and other local transportation partners and seeks the authorization to enter agreements for $11,232,751 in transportation planning funds. I move approval of MTC resolution number 4141.
That's been moved by Commissioner Tissier, seconded by Commissioner Przinski. Is there any public comment on this? Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Thank you. I'd like to now move on to the report of the Programming and Allocations Committee and turn to Chair Commissioner Glover.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Program and Allocation Committee met on April 9th this year. Three items are before you today for action. First being MTC Resolution 4132 adopts proposed policies, procedures, and project selection criteria for $30 million Cycle 1 Regional Active Transportation Program. I would move approval of MTC Resolution number 4132.
Okay. Moved by Commissioner Glover. May I please have a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Tissier. Is there any public comment? Any further commission discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries unanimously.
Next is MTC Resolution 3925 revised and 4035 revised. Approves the proposed project selection and program revision to the Climate Initiative Program for roughly $23 million in Cycle 1 and Cycle 2 funding, including recommendations on the Regional Bike Share Program. I would move approval of MTC Resolution 3925 revised and 4035 revised.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner McKenzie. Any public comment? Further discussion?
Yes.
There's one down.
Oh, yes, Commissioner Kwan and then Commissioner
LaCorda. First of all, I want to thank the committee for the support of the expansion to the East Bay. Director Hemming knows that I've been also asking that we look at some additional money for planning on the East Bay corridor beyond the bike share so that we can up the number of bikes that replace cars on the road. So I hope that we'll be able to bring some discussion on that back. Thank you.
Commissioner Liccardo.
Thank you. And I certainly support the expansion of bike share to the East Bay. I had a question about the $8.7 million, though. Is all of that for the expansion, or is any portion of that to help support the sustainability of the existing program? Because I know that we have serious concerns about that beyond our next year.
Commissioner, it's both. The exact amount is something we're going to be working with all the parties about. The lion's share is intended for the expansion, but it doesn't make sense to expand and then leave the first round behind. So we want to try to get them all in a good state of motion.
The second question I had was regard to car sharing, which I recognize is now spreading happily throughout the Bay Area. I know we're allocating $2 million here, and there were plans for more in the planned Bay Area, but I'm just trying to understand if this is something that the market seems to be addressing. That is, we have companies that are out there expanding, and they seem to be profitable. I don't know, but I assume they are. Why are we subsidizing it?
Commissioner, this specific request is to try to get more EVs into the car share. This specific request is to try to get more EVs into the car sharing market. So I think that's one thing we think that they still need additional assistance. And also just to go into other areas such as business parks. So you're right that car sharing is spreading, but we think there's still this actually did fairly well in terms of GHG reductions when we modeled it for the plan.
And that the EV subsidy, that's separate from the $6 million that we're spending on expanding electric vehicle infrastructure? That's a separate fund?
This would be focused on the car sharing.
Okay. I guess my concern is I understand that business parks are a logical location for this and we want them to expand there. It just seems to me that there are private companies that should be investing in car share on their own campuses. And I'm just a little concerned to the extent to which we're stepping forward with public money in places where the private sector can and should be stepping up.
And, Commissioner, I think it's a fair question to raise across a whole set of fronts, really. I mean, when you look at our climate program, especially where we're interacting with private sector providers, I don't think there's a hard and fast rule. I think, as Alex indicated, with EVs, we think that's something they're not going to get to for a while. And so if we invest some public money now, we're going to get some extra GHG benefit. I think the case is probably weaker for the business parks because, you know, these guys are in charge of looking at the market and figuring out where it can work. At the same time, we're looking for GHG reductions, and this field happens to be a place where if you can really swap out the emissions from one vehicle for another, you can get a very cost-effective GHG reduction versus some of the strategies that we're more familiar with, housing, transit, which, you know, are more of a push. But there are areas that we're used to dealing with, and there are areas where we don't have to stumble over this question as much. So it's sort of that paradox that what we're used to doing really isn't going to get you the greatest amount of GHG per dollar expended, but where you're going to get it is a place where there's a lot of private and entrepreneurial capital, and so do we really belong there? So I'm not giving you a hard and fast answer because I just don't think there is one.
I appreciate it's complex. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Commissioner Kinsey and then Commissioner Bates.
Yeah, just two things. One, could we get a sense of where, if anywhere, in our climate initiatives, we're investing in EV into the transit sector, into buses? Do we have any programs focused on moving to alternative fuel in that regard for transit? And then secondly, and just an observation, Commissioner Liccardo, I believe that public-private partnerships actually move us further faster, and that, you know, the idea of putting some public dollars behind private ideas is a good one. And I'd use as another example the ride-sharing programs that are beginning to take hold around the Bay Area. Providing support to those kind of programs, their development, their deployment, the applications to move more people in single-occupant vehicles today would be a good idea, as in my view. And it's just another idea that I hope in our TDM programs we could start to look at. But to the transit question, Steve.
On the transit question, there's nothing in this program. We previously spent quite a bit of money with both, I think, VTA and AC Transit on fuel cell buses, and the AC ones I think are still running around the streets. But that was another pot of money. So we've made the investment before, and that was basically to prove it out. What we've proved is that the buses are really nice, but they cost five times what a regular bus cost. And so until that gap narrows, we really don't have a prime time strategy.
Well, I'd just close by saying that I think we ought to be looking into the EV technologies for bus transit and seeing where they stand today. I know that there are companies that are delivering product throughout the country right now in the EV transit market. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Bates.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very brief. I agree with Commissioner Kinsey. It was basically what I was going to say, the points he made, and I won't repeat them. I think that my personal view is that if we don't figure out ways to get more people in cars, we're never going to do something about GHG. And so I love public transportation. I'm a strong advocate for it. But I think we've got to figure out ways of getting more people in the cars. And if we don't do that, it's a zero-sum game. We're never going to catch up. So I would encourage any efforts we can to figure out ways of getting people in cars by using the internet, using the iPhones, using Facebook, whatever it takes to get more people connected up.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to concur with the points that were made, but also to Commissioner Liccardo's point, I think we have some real opportunities in terms of leveraging public dollars and making sure that when we go into places like business parks and we have these discussions, we get commitments front end from those entities to contribute to these projects, and then the idea that those projects successfully could be sustained by those, you know, the private entities that are benefiting from them. So I think it's really incumbent on us to make sure that we do get that leverage and that we get the engagement of the private entities that have the resources. So, Commissioner Liccardo?
Yeah, if I could just respond briefly. Look, I very much appreciate the value of public-private partnerships. We've engaged in many in my own jurisdiction. I've been proud to support them. My concern is this. We actually, in San Jose, proposed subsidizing car sharing and came out with an extensive plan to do it, invited a bunch of bidders, and then found out that CarShare decided to show up and take on the market without any subsidy. And they didn't want to be a part of the program, and they were able to do it on their own. And we're seeing that in cities throughout the Bay Area. And we certainly see major corporate entities that are paying for car sharing on their campuses now. You know, I think there's probably a great opportunity to be able to leverage car share in a lot of communities where that opportunity doesn't exist. I'm thinking about a lot of low-income communities where a subsidy might make a lot of sense, and we might really be able to move the needle in a significant way. But I am concerned about the approach that says, let's go to the same places where we've already seen proven models that are market-based that work, and let's inject public dollars. I'd much rather see those corporate entities step up and look for opportunities to expand car sharing where it doesn't exist because there's some gap in the market, and that's what we need to fill.
Thank you. Commissioner Kwan?
I appreciate that, and I think we can fine-tune it. I do think even within my city there's a difference. So at some places where you really want to make it a public car share, we have to reserve public parking spaces, and that's like somewhat of a subsidy, and we're making sure that they get Tom and I have been working on all the electrical outlets and places in our city that's on the streets. I think that's different from if you have a business park. I also have neighborhoods where they don't have to be on the street, where they can be in parking lots and shopping centers. But I particularly was concerned about the issue that I think Mr. Campos also raised on bikes at program committee, that we need to make sure that low-income people, whether it's car share or share bikes, that we make sure that's accessible to people. So I think it would be worth it to look at different models. But I also think it's just different as to where some of the cities actually our contribution is that we're giving up parking revenues or charging them a very low flat rate so that they can be on the street and be very accessible.
Thank you very much. With that then, there's no further discussion. I'll call for the question. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Moving on to item 3.
Yep. Madam Chair, there's one more item before the committee this morning. That's MTC Resolution 4035 revised, approves recommended programming of funding to add 4 projects in Marin, Napa counties, and for the North Bay Priority Conservation Area program, and $4.5 million in projects in the Peninsula, South Bay, and East Bay counties for regional program based on project evaluation outcomes. I would move approval of MTC Resolution 4035 revised.
Second.
Thank you. That's moved by Commissioner Glover, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Is there any public comment? Okay, I don't see a speaker. Is this, you'd like to speak on this item? Oh, we've already. I'm sorry, it didn't say that on your card. So, would you like to come up and make that comment now?
Yeah.
Apologize, we already took action.
I would like to make a mention on a car share program. Once any entity subsidizes the car share, individual or company, then that entity is parting or sharing also the liability. And as you know, the liability is all except the driver. And so there is a problem here in which the car share so far has escaped the liability, because in case of an accident, then where is the limit of parting the damage, the compensation? And this is something you should look into with the insurance company. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much for your comments. So with that, is there any further discussion? And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Commissioner Glover. And we will now move on to the report of the Legislation Committee. And I'd like to turn to the committee chair, Commissioner Hagerty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Legislative Committee met on April 11, 2014, and referred 5 items to the commission. SB 1077 DeSaunier requires the Department of Motor Vehicles to develop and implement a pilot program to assess various issues related to implementing a vehicle miles traveled fee in California. The bill requires the DMV prepare and submit a report to the legislature by June 30th, 2016. I move approval to adopt, support, and seek amendment position on 1077 to change the agency from the California DMV to Caltrans.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Tissier. Any public comment? Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries unanimously.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next bill is AB 1721, Linder, which would exclude the Riverside County Transportation Commission planned I-5 occupancy toll express lanes from the state law requiring toll-free passage for low-emission vehicles. I move approval to adopt a support and seek amendment position on 1721 to broaden it to remove the clean vehicle toll exemption for express lanes statewide rather than for a single toll facility in Southern California.
All right. Moved by Commissioner Hegarty.
That one was a tongue twister.
Now we have a second. Second by Commissioner Liccardo. Any public comment? Any further commission discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries unanimously.
AB 2651 Linder and AB 2728 Pereira would end the policy of diverting vehicle weight fees from the state highway account to pay debt service on transportation bonds originally enacted by the legislature and passed by the voters as a general obligation bonds to be paid for with general revenue. Prior to the diversion, the weight fees had been used primarily to fund rehabilitation and safety projects on the state highway system through the State Highway Operation and Protection Program. Please note the edit on revised agenda to reflect AB 2651 instead of SB 2651 and AB 2722 left out from the original agenda. I move approval to adopt and seek support and seek amendment position on AB 2651 Linder and AB 2728 Prayer to make them both permanent and effective July 1st, 2015 to allow an additional fiscal year for the transition back to the general fund, covering the entire cost of the transportation bond debt service.
Okay. May I please have a second? Seconded by Commissioner Geary. Is there any public comment on this item?
Commissioner?
Any further commission discussion?
Yes.
Sure. Commissioner Giacopini?
Thanks. I just had a question. I mean, if we're with regard to the weight limits, I'm noticing that the weight limit that we're talking about is purely for commercial vehicles. And if we're going to start, as I think we should, supporting vehicle miles traveled, shouldn't we also be supporting fees on non-commercial vehicles based on weight, since the real heavy suburban-type vehicles are going to have a much greater impact on the roads than a Fit or something like that?
Can we just say, I know that this is primarily focused on weight fees, which are charged at trucks. So would you mind?
Yeah, I would probably say, Commissioner, that that issue may be more properly addressed in the DeSaunier bill. I mean, if we get a pilot for a vehicle miles traveled fee,
right,
I would expect there'll be a whole series of ideas about how do you do that pilot. I mean, for example, one good thing about the gas tax is it takes into account how much fuel you use, whereas a VMT fee doesn't. It takes account of how many miles you drive. And there may be a policy reason that you want to discourage fuel use, too. You're pointing out another one, which is different vehicles impose different damage on the system. But the chair is right. These two bills are just about the weight fees that derive from commercial vehicles, because that's the existing law.
And I guess I probably should have made my comment a little bit earlier on, but I just hope that staff will keep that concept in mind as we go forward.
Sure.
Great. Thank you. Any public comment on this? Further? Okay. No. With no further discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries unanimously.
SB 990 VIDEC would require counties to set aside 5% of the county's share of the Regional Transportation Improvement Program's funds for small disadvantaged communities. The bill also would require a regional transportation planning agency responsible for allocating Transportation Development Act funds to reserve 5% of such funds for those areas. I move approval to oppose SB 990 VIDEC.
Okay. Moved by Commissioner Hegarty. Seconded by Commissioner Przinski. Is there any public comment on this item? Any further commission discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries unanimously.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have one last one. The United States Department of Transportation recently released a notice of funding availability for $600 million in Tiger 6 grant funds. I move approval to support the regional endorsement of the barrier projects for federal Tiger 6 grants and include the South San Francisco Caltrans Station Access Improvement Project.
Second.
Okay, that's been
I thought you would do it.
Second by Commissioner Lupardo. Is there any public comment on this? All right. Any further commissioner discussion? Commissioner Dodd.
Just a question to staff. Last year we were not successful in our endeavor to get these funds, is my understanding. And what is the strategy in taking these, in getting this approved? Is there something more that we can do as individuals? I mean, speaking parochial from one of the items, if we can get pointed in the right direction, we might do some more work.
I am tempted to say, Commissioner, have a competitive Senate race in your state, which unfortunately we don't have. There is a very large political overlay on these funds. I know you're shocked by that.
Declaring your candidacy?
But we did try to pay attention to the words in the Federal Register notice about what sorts of projects they are interested in. And I think the words of the day seem to be, what is it?
The ladders of opportunity.
The ladders of opportunity. It's income inequality and the issue about how transportation can be a way not only of improving mobility, but it's a way of doing construction. It's a whole set of things related to that. And I think that, at least we are informed, might be helpful. This sweepstakes is almost random whether you're selected or not, because there is so much demand for $600 million nationally. $600 million, just to give you a sense, that's like twice the STA money we get every year in the Bay Area in the United States. It's worth entering the sweepstakes. I think, as you know, the project from Napa is in its own little subcategory for rural, so your competition is a little less fierce. We've got a planning project in the mix, and that's in a separate category, so that we might get lucky. We did get lucky the first couple of years of this program, and obviously working with your members of Congress, I know Congresswoman Speer is very interested in the Caltrain project. So, I mean, you really need somebody who's gonna pester people about it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Okay, with that, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. All right, moving on now, we'll have public comment, and I have two speaker cards. Our first speaker will be Jane Kramer, and she'll be followed by Ken Bukowski.
Jane Kramer, the issue is bicycles. Bike lanes are being instituted, but not very well implemented. I want bicycling, but not at the expense of chaos and tragedy. So, some positive suggestions. One, require that bicyclists carry minimum insurance. Two, require bicycle license plates. Three, establish simple and pointed rules of the road equally applicable to all users of the streets and sidewalk walkers. Ensure that their publication is ubiquitous and timely. And four, review the recent legislation requiring motorists to maintain a 3-foot distance from bicyclists. It's in AIM, when you think about it. Some recent examples to explain why the above. I'm in my car traveling along Lake Merritt. I need to make a right-hand turn. I note a bicyclist in the bicycle lane. But the lane doesn't tell me how I get into the right-hand lane in order to make the needed right-hand turn I need to make. I search for the instructions. They're not there. I come across diagonal hash marks. I have to assume, because time is running out, that's my window. I can't find the bicyclist that I tagged. We ended up like this. She put on her brakes just in time after she looked up, apparently, and on her face she's saying, "What?" Second example, I'm walking down toward Durant on Bowditch in Berkeley. I'm walking. There's a bicycle lane right next to me. The bicyclist coming down the road is not in the lane. It's on the rest of the street. He crosses diagonally across the entire street and zooms around the left-hand corner up the street. One sentence please. More. So, 6 days I take transit and walk, and on the seventh day I do not rest. I drive to get to and carry things that can't be done otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments and for coming today. And our next speaker is Ken Bukowski, and he'll be followed by Andre Carpio.
Just a couple of comments. I did video record the ABAG General Assembly, if any of you want to look at it. Two awards that I thought were outstanding was the Clean Energy Award for the City of Richmond. They've apparently partnered with the Marin Clean Energy, and now 84% of the people in Richmond are now using Marin Clean Energy. I think that was outstanding. And then the other one was the Redwood City Police Department has an excellent public outreach program, which I think was very deserving of the award. Another comment is, if you're going to have a workshop, if somebody would notify me, I'd be happy to go out there and record it, because I think public outreach begins with video, and I'd be happy to do that if anybody wants to let me know about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. And our final speaker is Andre Carpio.
I just wanted to comment on the commissioner. I have sent many letters and email to nominated official and elected official, and I never get any answer. And there is questions that are important, not only for me, but for the members of the public. So I don't know if it's a protocol, or if you are being rude, or what, or you don't care about comment of the public. But at least you should let know people that you care for. If you don't care for, then make an announcement, a public announcement. And this is very important. And as I said, the issue of the homeless has been completely ignored, yet there is $300 million that has been devoted to destroy what would have been a shelter for the homeless. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your comments. And if you send your letters to any commissioner at MTC, we will receive them and also will respond. So thank you. Our next, now I'd like to adjourn the meeting to our next meeting, which will be on Wednesday, May 28th, 2014. Thank you.